So with Jimmy Himes, I'm John Wilkerson. The program today here at Twin Peaks, right here on North Shore between Kingston Pike and Paper Mill. And the number to know is 29.2 degrees, which is what the temperature the beer is being served at, which is exactly why Vince Ferrara just came bursting through the door to get his spot at the table as he joins us for this hour. Vince's Views brought to you by Waters Equipment. Vince, how are you?
Good to see you guys. I'm good. How are you?
Oh, been fine. Like a month of Sunday since we last crossed paths.
Yeah, thankfully I get a chance to see you, and then thankfully for you, you get to get away from me leaving for Hoover in the morning. So,
well, right now the first game is still incomplete. They are at least playing. They go to the bottom of the eighth. Alabama, the 11 seed, leads the 6 seed Georgia 5-1. Bulldogs are in when it comes to the NCAA tournament. Everything says that. Alabama, Vince, has some work to do, and sometimes that's the difference you see on this Tuesday, is the team that knows its spot in the postseason is not set. They scored 3 in the first, 2 in the second, very aggressive at the plate and on the base paths. They built a 5-1 lead, then rain shut it down after delaying the first pitch to begin with. And so it's been Alabama. They've been able to benefit from having set the tone the way they did.
Well, and they benefited from not being able to go back to their starter, M. McMillan, who only went 2 innings, and they had the break, the weather delay. And so they brought in a freshman in Ben Hess, who's started midweek games for him. All he's done is strike out the most batters in a single game for Alabama this year. He's faced 15. He has 10 Ks in 4 1/3, just give up 1 hit. It's another reminder that you never know who rises up in these tournaments that hadn't had a prominent role for their team, and what kind of really good and elite pitching you might end up seeing that you haven't seen before. No one expected if someone gets hot. So it's just, he's been crazy. He's crazy good so far. He's out of the game now, but it's an interesting start to this tournament, and I think you just never know who you're gonna face that's gonna be really hot on the mound.
Yeah. And we'll see exactly how the schedule holds up, because right now we're less than an hour and a half from when they would hope that Tennessee and either Ole Miss or Vanderbilt would be getting underway tomorrow.
Yeah.
And yet the first game on the schedule is not complete in terms of how it's gone today. But also there's this that can happen. Game 2 today is South Carolina and Florida. Game 4 is Kentucky and Auburn. Vince, those teams finished the regular season against one another. They're getting ready to play their 4th straight game against that opponent.
Yeah, that's wild. And I love the fact that the seeds are based on record and tiebreaker, and there's not any sort of maneuvering to keep teams that played each other at the end of the regular season away from one another. So could add another level of venom and fire to that game, with a lot on the line for those two.
Vince, what do you think Tennessee will do with its pitching rotation?
Well, Tony Vitello was asked about today, and I'm sure you guys will play those comments at some point, but it's going to be Blake Tidwell on Wednesday, tomorrow. And then he laid it out like they went in the Mississippi State series, where on Thursday it would be, at least the plan, it would be Chase Dolander. Then Friday, if necessary, if they play, it would be Chase Burns. That could potentially, if Tennessee's won their first two and they skip Friday and don't have to play to Saturday, then Burns to a Saturday. And then the fourth game, if they're alive, would be a Drew Beam. So it would line up just like what we saw, only Blake Tidwell starting things out, and then the next three after that. If it plays out that nice and clean for Tennessee, John, I'm sure you've thought of this already too, that could set you up for Blake Tidwell in the first game of an NCAA regional at home.
When does the SEC tournament go to single elimination?
Saturday. Yeah.
That's the semis?
Semifinals, yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you survive in the loser's bracket, this was what Tennessee did last year. You survive in the loser's bracket, it simply becomes winner take all to win your bracket, and then it becomes the one game championship, just the single championship game. Because it used to be that you could play as many as 2 games on Saturday, and then it would just be, here's hoping you have something if you win on Sunday.
Yeah, and then 21-14
exactly
is your final score.
100%.
In the finals, yeah.
Why don't we go to the phones and say hello to Jim, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
You know, Vince, you and John and actually Dr. Punch also got into a conversation yesterday, and I think it was based off of a caller.
Yep.
And the gist of it was, could you maybe give more reward? And you were talking about college baseball. Could you give more of a reward to a team that's had an outstanding year than currently an outstanding team gets? And I think you were talking about it's been like over 20 years since the number one seed won the whole thing. Do you remember that conversation?
I do, and yes, it's only happened once, and the last time was the only time, 1999,
right.
Miami, since they expanded the field to 64 teams, that the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament has also won the national championship. It's an astounding stat, and it just highlights how difficult the run is and how loaded the College World Series is in terms of at so many teams being pretty close in ability, and it's a matter of who gets hot and who executes under the pressure.
When you guys were having that conversation, I immediately went to Major League Baseball. And John and Jimmy know this because I have been screaming about it for years. In fact, one time I told them I hate divisions. I would do away with divisions. That argument didn't get very far, but I hate divisions for how they're used to determine postseason. And last year, you have a team that wins 106 games, and they are guaranteed one game in postseason. And they're going to play a team that wins 90 games. So they win 16 more games, while a team that wins 88 games, who did win the World Series, but we're talking regular season, team that won 88 games gets a series of games. This is why I hate the postseason in Major League Baseball. You are not rewarding good teams. You're putting so much emphasis on, quote, winning the division. The Chicago White Sox won their division. Nobody else in their division even had a winning record. I would at least reseed the teams in Major League Baseball. Would you guys do anything to, I don't know, alleviate my gripe about how Major League Baseball does their postseason? And actually, I can make the same argument for NFL, and you know the examples we've talked about for years. But Vince, would you do anything for Major League Baseball to try to make it a little fairer to a team that wins 106 games and they have the bad luck of being in the same division with a team that won 107?
Well, I wouldn't force them to play a one-game playoff. That's one thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here are your parting gifts. There's your that's not exactly a reward either. You're one game back, and then your season comes down to one game. So that's one thing. John, I remember in the offseason they were talking about, or when all the labor dispute was still happening before they came to an agreement, they were tossing around some drastically different potential ways of doing the postseason with sort of a stagger tier type of format. Did anything jump out to you during that, any of those proposals?
Well, I hate the idea of a bye for the one seed. I think, first of all, it would do more harm than reward for the team that wins it, that is your regular season champ in each league, because I just think that baseball is such a game of routine.
Yeah.
That's why I would be against it. Because, Jimmy, how many times have we seen it where, say, in the NFL, teams make that decision to either rest their starters 1 week or even more, like weeks 17 and 18, and then they can't relight that candle when you get into the playoffs?
Yeah, That's a little bit of the danger, to get out of your routine and to not be as sharp from whenever you do set a lot of people. So that and we've seen it work the other way.
Yeah.
So it's I don't know that there's a perfect answer for that.
I mean, the only thing maybe is you do more home games. Like if you did away with the one game playoff for the wild cards, maybe you make it a three-game series, and it's all at the home team. Maybe you stagger it to where it's not like we've always done it, where it's just a one-game difference in home and away, mm-hmm. and where you play those games in a series. If you go to a five-game series, maybe it's a 4-1 or something like that to add to the benefit of it. Now, I know people would gripe if, say, they had the same record and it was a tiebreaker that made that big of a difference. So you're never going to make everybody happy. But it's a very difficult thing to make everybody happy. I agree with you, John, on the buys, because not only say you're running away from your division in baseball, yeah, maybe your starters are still playing, but are you in the same competitive mindset and in that grind? So then you haven't done that for a while, and then you had to wait a little bit more. Kind of like with your football example, where maybe you don't play starters your last game or two, then you have the bye.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, it's like a month since you played anything meaningful.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that overrides wanting to reward teams for having improved records. My example, for people that didn't hear what I was talking about for college baseball, is I wouldn't do a bye either in college baseball. I agree with you. It takes them out of their rhythm, their routine. But I would like to see the host of a regional or super regional be the home team all the time, instead of the stupid coin flip that we do. We got to make it even. You know, at the SEC tournament, home teams are based on who's been at the home team the least, and just this, all this silliness. Reward the teams that have done better and let them be the home teams. Because they want to do neutral site, the NCAA wants to pose like they're all about fairness and all this other nonsense. So forget that, man. You earn your regional, you're the home team in all the games that you play in. And the two seed would be the home team against the three would be the four in any of those games as well.
That's a good idea. I like that idea. I just like to have whatever sport we're talking about, just having the regular season where you've got teams that are just having just tremendous regular seasons get more rewards than sometimes they do right now, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, guys, I appreciate your thoughts. Have a good afternoon.
You too, Jim. Thank you very much. We've got more with Vince coming up. His appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. We'll get a break as the program today is at Twin Peaks, 135 North North Shore, between Kingston Pike and Paper Mill. It's Vince's Views, his weekly appearance and visit with us, brought to you by Waters Equipment. Back to the phones we go. It's Mark who joins us next. Hello, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. John, Jimmy, and Vince. Yeah, my first question would be about Jared Dickey. Forgive me, you might have mentioned the last time I called in about his status, mm-hmm. but is there any possibility we could see him in at least the NCAAs this year? I think he's a difference maker and maybe the difference between a national championship and not with key hits. So any status on him?
Yes, Mark. He's on the travel roster in Hoover, and Tony Vitello said today, because I asked him, we may see Jared Dickey at the SEC tournament, perhaps. If not, he said he's available to be used, and he's really done a lot in terms of his recovery, cryotherapy, which Tony amusingly said, wow, that's really cold. But
that's great news.
He said it's 50-50 on whether they would use him. I think it would be situational. He said it'd be a little bit dicier in terms of defense and base running. But if you don't in Hoover, he feels like he'll be available for the NCAA tournament, John.
Yeah, the good news was that as Tennessee's been on the road, this will be the third week out of the last four that they've been on the road, got to see him for the first time walking without the boot
right
in Starkville. So that was the best thing to see, is that because they were just hoping to keep him in a position where it was as much weight off of it as possible. But now it looks like that they feel confident that the fracture has healed, and now it's about getting him perhaps some live swings. And as you mentioned, Vince, that would be what you would see first before him returning to the field, where he got off to a great start playing a lot of left field.
That's right. And, Mark, what John left out is he asked Dickey for the boot so he could give it to me. So, the boot.
Yeah, nice.
Hey, and you guys mentioned also about the last team to go in as the number one seed. It's been since 99. So you've got to, the way I look at this, SEC tournament, yeah, it'd be great to win it. But if you're gonna lose a tournament, you'd rather lose that one because at least there's a tomorrow in the SEC tournament. There's not one. Other than the double elimination in the NCAA. So, but if Tennessee can pull this off, I think they would go down as one of the best college teams in history. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I think so.
That's what analysts have pointed to. I mean, and you just look at what they've done, and it's not just the home runs, Jimmy. It's what their team ERA is. It's what their fielding percentage is. Right now they're in position to set a school record for fielding percentage in a season, and Tennessee was, for lack of a better word, a national leader or a national champion. That's what they're pointed to in one of Coach Delmonico's years with a fielding percentage that was just a touch lower than what it is right now.
I just wonder how many teams have led the nation in home runs, led the nation in earned run average, and had a great fielding percentage too. Then I don't think there are a whole lot of teams that could claim that.
Yeah, and switching gears real quick on the Saban and Jimbo Fisher fiasco, I was looking it up and I saw it online there the other day. You look back at Texas A&M's recruiting over, I think they went back about 7 or 8 years, and they struggled just to get one five-star. And see if you guys think the same thing that I do. You remember Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze? They came up there that 1 year and got all these big-name stars, and they were basically the number one recruiting class. This sort of is similar to me in that, you know, A&M, you struggled to get just one five-star, and then you get all these, you get 7 or 8 five-stars in 1 year, this unbelievable class. And also, I'll ask your opinion on this. If this class goes to Texas A&M and can possibly, you know, be in the Final Four, the championship game, or even win the national championship, doesn't this put a asterisk or a tarnish on that team being able to do this? And then also, and I know you guys have talked about this, the NCAA, I believe, is going to have to get a better handle on this NIL situation. But the similarity between what A&M did with that number one recruiting class last year and Ole Miss, and I know it's different circumstances, but you just, It just raises a lot of flags when you struggle to get one five-star in the past 7 or 8 recruiting cycles, and then this time you just blow it out of the water. And I just believe there's some legs to what Saban was talking about there. And but I'll hang up and listen to you guys' comments, and thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mark, thank you.
It's a lot there. go ahead, Jim.
Well, here's the difference. Ole Miss cheated to get Treadwell and Kim Dichie and Tunzel. Okay, mm-hmm. They paid them illegally to get them. I don't know that A&M did anything wrong.
Yeah,
they offered them name, image, and likeness. I thought Saban had a poor choice of words when he said they bought the players, because that, to me, implies they cheated. If they lined up name, image, and likeness deals, there's nothing that says you can't do that. So I would not – one. I disagree with Mark on that. There's no way I'd put an asterisk on A&M winning a national championship unless they find something else. But what they did, according to what we have right now, Vince, is there's nothing. It's legal, right?
Yeah.
You can offer name, image, and likeness. Tennessee's got a quarterback coming in for $2 million a year. Is that illegal?
Yeah.
So, I think one reason they got these players is they've got name, image, and likeness deals going on, but they are not illegal. Not yet.
I'm with you. It's the situation, and some teams are taking more advantage of it. So I would be careful to be too critical of A&M, because Tennessee is one of the leaders with its collective right now.
And I bet they're paying more for the quarterback than A&M's paying for any individual player.
Well, Jimbo doesn't know anything about the NIL deal, that, so
our collective. Right. Yeah, that's right.
And Mark mentioned it's different circumstances. Like, to your point, Jimmy, it is different circumstances right. than Ole Miss. Also, he said that Texas A&M struggled to get any five stars. They had one in the 21 class. They had two in the 2020 class. They had two in the 2019 class. So they've been getting them. And there are plenty of schools that would love to have one or two five stars in their class. So they've been in the top 10 to 15, 20 in their you know signing classes since Jimbo's been there. This one had a big jump, and I agree with Mark that the red flags come up because of the volume of them in this class, and you have to wonder what happened. But it's the lay of the land right now, unfortunately.
Name, image, and likeness is what happened.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We do appreciate it. Today we're at Twin Peaks on North Shore, right between Kingston Pike and Paper Mill. And why don't we go back to the phones and say hello to Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hi, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. I told your producer I wanted to talk about this past spring practice, but I decided to talk about recruiting. And the people that's committed to us, what is it, 9 right now, public commitments as far as UT's next signing class?
Yes.
And I wanted you to go over a little bit on some of those. I know something about all of them. What do you think of the ones that's committed to us right now? I'm not expecting you to say a whole lot. Just what do you think about them as prospects and what they've done?
Well, obviously, it starts with the quarterback in Nico. We won't spend much time on him because he has been talked about so much. Although I will say this, he was impressive to some and kind of so-so at the regional, the Elite 11 right. regional in Nashville. Now he right. did well enough to advance to the finals. So I saw some quotes not only from recruiting analyst Steve, but from Trent Dilfer, who is a coach in the Mid-State at Lipscomb Academy and is obviously he played in the NFL, but he basically is the guy with the Elite 11. And he was very complimentary of Nico and says he has a lot of the intangibles. He said he doesn't have the entitlement was the word that he used, that you would think guys, not only with his talent, his recruiting ranking, but then the NIL and all that stuff. He said he's not entitled. He knows he has a lot of work to do. And so he works at it. But he said he's got all the traits you're looking for. And he also knows the gravity of the job in the SEC. So I thought those were interesting compliments on Nico. I mean, the rest of the class has the top of it really impressed. I mean, we talked to Caleb Herring, did an interview with him on Sports Talk. Terrific size, gives you that edge rusher that you need. Ethan Davis, man, this kid has a body on him, 6'5", 221, tight end that Tennessee desperately needs in terms of a dual threat playmaker type. Most recent commit in Sylvester Smith from Alabama. He had a nice list of schools that wanted him, and he's in the secondary where you're going to have to replace McCullough and Flowers and some of those guys. We've talked about Trevor Duncan and heard interviews with him here at Knoxville Catholic. I think you'll see his recruiting rating rise also. And, you know, there's some other guys that I think have a chance. We talked to Nate Spillman, was very impressive on Sports Talk just last week, played under Trent Dilfer at Lipscomb Academy. And a kid that moved as a young player from West Africa has a really terrific story. So there's other really good players in that class, but those are a few of the ones that are the most impressive. They got work to do, Steve. You got to add on the line of scrimmage. You know, they've done really well in state. You have three total linemen, one offensive lineman, right. two defensive linemen. So there's right. obviously work to do. The numbers are decent at this point. Jimmy, any thoughts from you on that signing class, the commit class so far?
You hit on about everything. I think Aiden Bussell is one of the better in-state players that they got, so I'd throw his name into that equation. Nathan Robinson out of Greenbrier, I think's a pretty good prospect too. He's only listed as a 3-star, so is Bussell, but I think those are pretty good players.
Right. Okay. Well, okay, guys. See you later.
Sure do appreciate it, Steve. Thank you. And we invite you to join the conversation, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900.
Vince, you were going to share some of the other things Tony Vitello said today. It is a press conference. What stood out to you?
Well, one of the things I was going to mention was Jared Dickey, so we got to that with a caller. He will be available at the SEC tournament, whether they'll use her or not, to be determined, but gone really worked hard and come a long way to try to get himself able and available to play. Another thing was the rotation. We hit on that also, where it'll be Tidwell, Dolander, Burns, and Beam. He also mentioned, look, we don't – sometimes you kind of got to scrap the plan in order to try to, you know, win. He did mention in terms of the starters that they'd like to get all those guys in a game at some point in Hoover before they leave. So I thought that was interesting. Obviously, the longer you're around, the better opportunity you have for that. And just really complimentary on the way the guys battled against Johnson and Mississippi State in that, yeah, people point to they weren't getting hits. They only had a run until that rally late. But he said because of the quality at-bats and the way they made Johnson work, it helped tire him out, and it paid off for him with Gilbert, obviously Beck before that, and Gilbert with the big blow to put Tennessee on top. And so the results are not always immediate. Sometimes they pay off for you in the end. So he was really complimentary about those guys. And those are a few of the bigger things. That Tony Vitello video is up at 99.1thesportsanimal.com, and you'll be able to hear it on Sports Talk, I'm sure, before long.
Tennessee buys out of the Brigham Young road game, and they're going to play Virginia in Nashville. Your thoughts on that?
You know, Jimmy, when we talked about this last week, my initial thoughts, not knowing that BYU apparently wanted to keep that game, was that I was fine with it.
Didn't it raise a flag when Tennessee was giving them $2 million, though? That's what I was raising a flag about.
Yeah.
Why is Tennessee paying them if they wanted out of it, too?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah. I hadn't digged in yet, and we hadn't seen that yet. But at the time, I guess some of the conversation was, from fans, was why aren't we playing in Neyland Stadium? Like, why are we going to Nashville again and the turf and we lost there and all that kind of stuff? And I get you want home games. And Danny White has said he prefers playing in front of the fans at Neyland Stadium. But it seems like it wasn't just about playing in Neyland Stadium. It was about what was most net positive in terms of the profitability for them. And it wasn't going to BYU. So I am not a fan of getting out of that game. Fans want home and home. Well, you had a home and home, but you got to pay it off on the other end at some point. And that's what they had with BYU. They already had their home game with them. But if you're going to do true home and homes and stay with it, you got to pay it off and go there. I think it would have been a cool trip for fans that would have gone. Yes, in terms of number of fans, you can get more in Nashville, but to get something, you got to give something. If you want quality opponents at home, the best way is to do the home and home, and you're going to have to pay it off on the other end. Yes, it's a road game, all that. So it looks like there's some of the competitive aspect of it, too, in addition to the money. I don't think it's just they just did it to get a win. I think they thought about that, but I also think that the money aspect of it, of hey, who, you know, we may lose money going to BYU, all that kind of stuff. We're in Nashville. We have that money. You can make, you think, 1.5. Is that what your estimate was?
That's what in reading the contract, so the first $2 million of ticket sales go to Brigham Young for the buyout. The next $500,000 goes to the Nashville Sports Authority. And then Virginia and Tennessee split $1.5 million after that. Mm-hmm. Tennessee's net would be a little bit more than that because – to travel to Brigham Young would cost about $300,000 more when you talk about chartering flights, right, than it would be to go to Nashville. So your net positive would be about $1.5 million, right, if you sell as many tickets as you think.
Right.
And then Tennessee gets no compensation for going to Brigham Young. Brigham Young got zero compensation for coming to Tennessee as a home and home. So but I'm kind of in your camp. I wish they'd played the game. I do think Tennessee fans enjoy traveling.
Right.
And to illustrate that, look at the bowl games. To illustrate that, look at how many fans went to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
How many fans went to Cal? how many fans went to Oregon?
Right.
So I think that they enjoy that, and so I would have preferred that. But anyway, Tennessee opted to go in the direction they did. And Brigham Young, as it came out, as you were talking about, clearly wanted to play the game.
Right.
And did not want that game canceled.
And, look, I get Nashville is important in terms of recruiting the presence mid-state. Mm-hmm. They want to do it annually. But, John, the home-and-home games, which are preferred by fans, it's more than just the great trips that can be there as an experience for the fans. But it's also a different – it can be a different cool opponent – for the home dates. And
right.
When fans are so worn out with non-conference weak opponents that don't bring name value, it's pretty nice to have on the schedule.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And I think that's a perfect point. And you want it to be a Power 5 opponent, and you want it to be a name that you have high regard for.
Right.
And so it is – there's nothing wrong with the bye games that you do have, and that can, I think, fill up. Let's just say if you play,
Georgia State?
Yeah. I mean, no.
Tennessee Tech.
Yeah. Bowling Green.
Yeah.
But when you get those opportunities, there's going to be one or two. I just think, and Jimmy, you've said this for a long time, and I agree entirely, that you should have it to where you can see that it's tiered, that you have – to what you would say attractive, and it doesn't even have to be both Power Fives. It could be Power Five, solid group of five, and then the two that if you want to make sure that you've got eight good home games, that's what you have.
Yeah, and that's what Tennessee it did for many years. They'd play a marquee team, maybe a UCLA. The other opponent could have been a potentially dangerous team like a Southern Miss.
Southern Miss
could have been.
Exactly what I was thinking.
And then you
about.
Got two other games that – or should be easy wins for you. That's what Tennessee used to do.
Here's another thing, and Danny White mentioned this to Brent Hubbs in his interview on VolQuest. He said, we didn't have any room on the schedule. Like, our schedule is booked up until 2030 or whatever it is. We just bought out of a game with BYU. Why can't you buy out of a game with Akron or Ball State or
right.
one of those non-conference games? So when you buy out of games, to me it puts everything in play to be able to redo it to what's best for the fans, unless you're thinking about the wins and losses as well.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect point as well. Final segment for us today with the one, the only, Vince Ferrara. If you want to get a question or comment in under the wire, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900. And Vince, as we've talked about with the SEC tournament schedule, there's a chance that they might not play four games today. And so this becomes hurry up and wait. And who knows exactly what adjustments we might see to the schedule as they try and get all games in before doing something or anything drastic.
Yeah, Alabama, they did complete the first game. 11-seed Alabama beat 6-seed Georgia 5-3. So the Bulldogs are done, and Alabama will advance. But who knows how they're going to do it. I mean, are they going to go to a single elimination? I guess there's already been some theories that they could potentially do that, because where are you going to get these games in? There's five games ahead of Tennessee's game.
Correct.
Which is supposed to start in about 24 hours.
Yeah.
And at least according to the schedule. But it's just the weather, as you have pointed out, John, not only is supposed to – they don't think they're going to get their next game in, but everything else tonight could be in danger. Tomorrow the weather is supposed to be worse, and Thursday is supposed to be the worst. So this could be a lot of hurry up and wait. So,
yeah, and it comes down to then, when do you warm somebody up? When
right.
do you get them hot, and what do you look for? But I do think that they've always had contingency plans in place, but now it's going to be about how they operate, because who knows – when you are, one, going to find out who you play, and then when do you get to play?
Are fans right now saying, yes, rain, storm? Like, hey, I don't mind Tennessee not playing a bunch of games in that tournament and then preparing for the NCAA tournament? Because there have already been some that have been like, are they going to rest starters? So maybe for some, they're like, hey, we'll take the rest. We'll be okay. We'll take our chances. I bet some people are thinking that.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I don't think Tony Vitello is thinking that.
Because no.
his deal was, when he was asked what's the priority today, he said, play good baseball. He said, I know those are boring words, but that's his big priority. Play good baseball and then get postseason experience. You won't get that if the tournament is half wiped out, you don't play very many games.
And then Trey Lipscomb, Chase Burns named semifinalists for the Golden Spikes Award as that list is out.
Yeah, love it. Definitely deserving. So we're going to see a whole lot more of those postseason recognition for this team, John.
And then also what's going on right now, what will folks find at 991thesportsanimal.com?
Well, always on my blog, I keep updates on the VFLs and the NFL, one-time vols, and the local players as well. There's not been any movement in the last week or so with any of those guys. The last movement in terms of a VFL, or one-time vol, I should say, because God forbid anyone that left the permanent forever, that's gone. But Jameer Johnson was waived by the Packers. Daniel Helm also had been released by the Atlanta Falcons. So those were a couple of the more recent moves. But nothing in the last week. Well, as soon as there changes, I'll update that. You can find that full list of the most recent guys at 99.1 The Sports Animal blog section. You'll see blogs from myself and Jimmy Himes. Jimmy with a blog on Paul Biancardi, who joined us last week. A lot of great content in there that Jimmy put to writing on our website. You should check that out as well. And then we have the video, Tony Vitello, that's up on our website, and so much more podcast. The national section, you can get Titan stuff, you can get Cubs stuff, Brave stuff. Spend some time on our website, 991thesportsanimal.com.
Vince, always appreciate it. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right, you are Vince-free for a while. Congratulations.
That's right. Before you go, what have you picked from the menu today?
I'm going to go with the Nashville Hot Chicken. Love Nashville Hot, and they do it great here, so we'll do that.
All right, that's Vince Ferrara, and we have more sports talk coming away, and Jimmy Himes, a very special guest, joins us next.
Danny White, Tennessee Athletics Director, will join us in a few minutes.
That's to start hour number three of sports talk. Stay with us on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.